Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us to the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct the hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, it's time to rethink your level A protection. Multi-threat suits made of lightweight Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric are part of the most functional non-encapsulated level A ensembles that bring an essential modernization to hazmat PPE. Certified NFPA 1994 Class 1 suits with Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric offer unencumbered movement, increased range of motion, improved peripheral visibility, excellent dexterity, and reduced heat stress so you can stay engaged longer. You can learn more at GoreTexProfessional.com. Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 314 of the Hazmat Guys podcast. We are doing a little bit of a spillover from last week's episode where we dive into the mailbag because we went a little too long into the two questions that we had.
We turned two sentences into a half hour. It was just ridiculous.
we're like, yeah, we can't make these an entire topic. And then we start talking and we're like holy crap, we're at the 30-minute mark.
And we do have my special guest, my mustache, on
yes.
Tonight,
hello, Bob's mustache. How are you?
I don't know if you can do that.
you know what? Just brush it up against the microphone so it can say hi to all the people who are listening.
You know what? Let's see if I can do that. Still a little soft. It hasn't really, it's sea legs under it yet, but it'll be there.
We are idiots. No conferences coming up anytime soon, right?
Nothing
on the horizon.
Although we are already in negotiation with a couple for next year, starting out early. I want to say it's Minnesota and Michigan.
Hey.
We're already starting to talk with them.
All right. So very cool. So we'll keep you updated on that. Last week we had done a mailbag episode. We turned around and we said, yeah, we can't make much topics out of this, and we did. So the third and final question, and I think we could probably make a topic of this. If not, it's a shorter episode.
That's fine.
This next one actually didn't come from the mailbag, but it was a good question, so we are throwing it in. It came from a drill that we had a couple of weeks ago with a county within New York State. And the way that it was set up, we had it was a transportation type of incident, and we had multiple hazard. It was a multiple hazard event where we had a vehicle collision, a tote had been knocked off the bed, fallen on someone. The tote had ethanol in it, and miraculously, there was also a radiological event happening at the same time. But the tote had pinned a person. So when we were hot washing afterwards, we made it so that there was a flammable atmosphere around the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And the victim would have needed to be extricated. So the question was, what does that risk reward look like to us, to me and Bob, when it comes to performing a rescue in a hazardous environment? Specifically, this was a flammable environment. We talk about all the different ways that we can change the atmosphere. We could change the product to do foam, but when push comes to shove, at some point there's some risk, and at some point there is some reward. So how do you go about struggling with each one of those? The question they're asking is, what can we do to minimize the risk, and then when is the risk acceptable?
When is the risk acceptable? Honestly, it's when the threshold of the incident commander is met.
Explain.
I can't imagine a situation where you can numerically or measurably put a number on when risk is acceptable. Like, there are some incident commanders that are like, I will burn down this house to get this thing down. You know, like, I will destroy the planet, a scorched earth type operation to get this operation done, because maybe, the political pressure, whatever it might be. And then there's also people that are so risk adverse that they will risk nothing to save everything.
Yeah.
Right?
So the situation that we had the ethanol container pinning the dummy down. We had flammable atmosphere within, I would say, what do we set that up, about 15 feet around the tote was all 100% LEL?
Yes.
So if that were me and you, at what point are we going to accept the risk of going into a flammable environment to pull the victim out and to extricate the victim? I guess that's really the question, right? Because we set it up to be a prolonged extrication.
Right.
So we often talk about the snatch and grab, right? All right, snatch and grab, but this one was specific, not snatch and grab.
I liked it because it was outside of the normal operation that we usually throw at people for scenarios, right? We usually give him a lightweight dummy under an empty drum, and you say, yeah, there's the guy, go get him. That's not real. A fully loaded drum is 400 pounds. And so even if you get He-Man the Fireman to come over there and push that thing off of him, good luck. That's 55 gallons. Now, we put a 350-gallon tote and filled it up with real water.
Not fake water.
Real water, right?
Real
water. So you're talking about probably a ton, 2,000 pounds of water. So though we had a dummy that was a full-weighted dummy, probably about a 200-pound dummy,
it was heavy.
2,000 pounds of water. When you go up there just to grab him by the shoulders and go, let me just pull him out of here, you're not doing it. So there was an added component that I was intrigued to watch them do, was there are two separate sects in special operations, we'll say. There are the technical specialists on extrication, the guys that do heavy, that do rigging, that do special tools and specialize in extricating people. And then there's people that do hazmat. And very rarely do you get somebody that can do both.
Right.
Right. So now, do you suit up somebody that is a technical specialist with, let's say, airbags or leverage or whatever it might be in a suit that they can't do, which we can talk about just-in-time training for that kind of crap, which we've done, and we have a little experiment. Maybe we'll bring that up in the premium section.
Okay.
I'm going to write that down. I have my little here stuff. Or do you take a hazmat guy that isn't necessarily that strong in extrication and say, listen, if you just go up there and do these things, and they don't have, listen, they might be a great metering guy, they might be a great chemistry guy, they might be a chemist, but there's a seat for every ass and a ass for every seat. And so when I send that guy up there and be like, dude, all you got to do is just put this 2x4 in there. And we were saying this to them was, you give me a lever long enough and I'll move the world. Right. So if you were to extend it out, maybe do, but
if they don't understand the coup contra coup, right? The what you're doing has an opposite effect on the other side. If I roll a truck on the side that's affected, then the other side is doing the opposite thing on the other side. And so if these concepts aren't understood, I think chemically they kind of knew where they were going. And this is a critique of them. I'm just saying in general, when you give them one of these risk versus reward things where you have a real scenario and we're not moving the goalposts, the assessment of how long it's going to take me to get this guy out is incredibly distorted.
Oh, it was. Yeah, I mean, it took them a good 40 minutes before they even addressed the victim.
Yeah.
Right. And that in and of itself, I think, is not so much a function of the team. I think it's a function of the mindset of going into a hazmat drill.
Right. They expect certain things.
Right. And we expect our trainings to be as in real life. Right. And in real life, I think everybody would see the victim and go towards it first. But when you're in hazmat training, you put those blinders on and you're like, hold on, I got to take out my binoculars. I got to figure out what this chemical is.
They're doing it to the drill.
To the drill. And we don't set our drills up that way. We set our drills up. But we know you're going to do that.
Right.
So we're able to kind of critique you and be like, what are you doing at the end? Like, why did you take... yeah. But that was one of their main questions. They're like, at what point is it safe to do a prolonged extrication? Like, and I think very much the answer to that is very similar to how we've come to think about radiation in that ALERA concept, right? As the risk is as low as reasonably achievable. So if you're not doing anything, but you're going to go in there and perform the prolonged extrication, then you're wrong. If you're trying to wait for the numbers to reach zero, then you're wrong.
Right. This goes back to that 30-70 rule.
Yeah. Describe the 30. So I know we've talked about it before, but we might as well. If you didn't hear yet, we are transitioning to a new format that is going to give you, the listener, even more content.
Yeah, for example, in our technician and specialist levels, we are adding even more video content, access to our entire show catalog, and even access to a monthly small group Q&A session to answer any questions that come up, as well as so much more.
All of this for less than a cup of coffee that you premium snobs like to drink for the entire month of access.
This is the stuff that you've been asking for. So take a look at what we can do to take you to the next level of hazmat.
Go to our website, thehazmatguys.com. You can sign up for our premium tiers that will give you even more hazmat goodness.
And this is an old military adage, but it's very strong and it works very well in hazmat and all emergency work, is that if you wait till you have 30% of the information, if you have 30% of the information or less, you don't have enough. If you have 70% or more, you have too much and you waited too long. So the sweet spot is between 30 and 70 for us to make decisions in the emergency services. Now, in this scenario, I'm just kind of honing in on that whole extrication versus flannel range. Like, I've equated this, and I'm, as I say it more and as more situations pop up, it becomes more and more true, is that hazmat is a street fight. Whereas we say consistently that the meters drive the PPE. But I will inject one thing before I even pick my PPE. It is, can I do a street fight on this hazmat? Can I gouge its eyes? Can I punch it in the nuts? What can I do to change this entire environment for me? Mm-hmm. And then I pick my PPE. So, like, if you said, okay, listen, I have this guy, he's down on the ground, and we said ethanol was coming out on this thing, and you said, okay, we need to bring the technical specialist for extrication here. This is beyond a hazmat scene. What can I do to bring them in? Because as the scene sat, the flammable ranges are not conducive to that.
Right.
So what can I do to skew the scene? And I'd be like, you know what? 5 fog lines. 1,000 fans. Grab a rig and put the hook on the tote and maybe tip it back. I don't know. I'm just kind of riffing off this thing.
Right.
But in order for me to distort the scene in a positive method for me to be able to do my objective quickly, right? And I'm talking about a time duration because, you know, if you're seeing my hands because you're on a premium, it all comes down to what is my end goal? I want to be able to walk away from there with no ill effects, let's say. Well, therefore, I have the effect, the dose, and the time. And I can play with those two things in order to achieve that ultimate output I want. No problems. And so if I move my time down to zero, instant, immediate, I have the immediately dangerous to life and health, and I have my maximum dose for my output I want. So all I got to do is change the environment in order to achieve that goal before I even start my whole thought process. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, but you try to change the environment. Like the scene that we had set up was pretty big. Yes, we probably could have done fans, but change that product to now gasoline, acetone, right? Yes. Where no matter how much fans you put on there, you're going to have a flammable atmosphere where you're working.
Then I'm thinking foam, but I get where you're going now.
Right.
It's to change the environment. That's my key.
At some point, somebody has to make a decision that we've done everything we can to minimize our risk.
Now it's time to work.
Go in and get them.
Right now, it's, you know, like, maybe I'm using, everybody wants to be a gangster until it's time to do gangster things, right?
Right.
Everybody wants to be that guy. We're safe. But now it comes down to put the rubber on the road. And you got to go do it.
Right. And
I think risk.
One of my questions to them when we were doing the hot wash, and they were like, well, we didn't want to go in and do X, Y, and Z, which is understandable, right? Because, again, not the function of the team, but the function of the fact that you're operating in a drill and you're in drill mindset. I always say, well, listen, we're all firefighters first. Is there anybody here who wouldn't risk going to the floor above unprotected to grab somebody? Because that's a risk. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get burned. But you have accepted the fact that something bad could happen to you to save a life.
Yes.
So in this instance, what is the difference? What is the difference between going unprotected on the floor above to grab somebody or going in to a flammable range to yank somebody out or to perform an extrication and possibly being involved in a flash?
I think, and I don't even know if I mentioned this in a show. I might have, but there, it's because we don't teach. We teach this thought process as a black if-then statement, black and white if-then statement, but it's actually quite a bit of gray. And so there is a great paper, and I should probably find this thing. I know I have it around here somewhere in this pile of debris behind me, but there is a when they were doing firefighter maydays, right? They compared it to U.S. Navy fighter jet pilots, and every 6 months they have to go in for testing, retraining. And so they go, okay, if you're in a flat spin and you're under 10,000 feet, you will pull the eject button. If you are doing this, you will pull the eject button. There is no discrepancy, and they must pass it with 100% right in order for them to get their wings for the next 6 months.
And that's now, that's that binary scenarios, right? Yes, no.
If yes, if no, right? Whatever the hell it is. And so now you go to the firehouse and you say, okay, guys, if you're in a house fire and you fall through the stairs, are you calling a mayday? And you're going to get it invariably. Well, who's in the engine today? How much air do I have? What time of day is it? So there's so much. Well, and so now you translate this over to the hazmat thing. Well, is it gasoline? Well, what kind of foam do I have? Well, what's the weather out here? where we're trying to say risk reward. What's the incident commander going to do? His life experiences, his past fire experience or emergency experience, what's his training level? All these things are going to play into what his threshold is. So I don't think there is a acceptable where you can say this is acceptable to you. Maybe not to him. Maybe
right.
Not. And the thing is like, the whole the unknown, like that whole thing of the armchair quarterback, he's not dealing with that one term that when you're live on scene, you don't have that piece of the puzzle, and that's what's going to happen. You don't know the punchline of the joke yet.
Yeah.
You know, so afterwards, 2-3 years ago, later, and we're talking about, remember that ethanol run? You know, it's funny you should say that because when we were there, we didn't know it was ethanol. So, like, it sounds very mundane and paltry when we're saying now, but at the same time, like when you were there, they didn't know it was ethanol for a while, I think it was. Or no, maybe they did because the placard was there. No, they didn't get the papers for a while.
They didn't take the papers for a while, right?
So they didn't know what it was,
right? But then we turned around and we were like, all right, well, how can we assess the toxicity of this substance? And yeah, they were like, well, we can't. We didn't know what it was.
Right.
And our meters weren't picking up and telling us the toxicity. I said, yeah, but the victim is telling you the toxicity, aren't they?
He's just like, shaboom, like, shaboom.
Oh.
Because he's drunk. Like,
yeah.
It's ethanol. Everybody's party favorite. I loved it. You know what? Like, that was a great drill.
That was a great drill.
I think they got a lot out of it. We had all had a great time doing it. I think they were kind of surprised at the complexity with it was like peeling the onion.
Yes. Yeah, we don't move the goalposts, but we don't make it complicated.
No.
If you really wanted to break down what that drill was, that was an operations level drill.
Yes.
Right? With a little bit of hazmat tech resource, what are you going to do type of a thing. But that's what a good drill is. A good drill is a basic, it challenges your basic fundamental understanding of how you operate.
I think they set up all their own obstacles.
Yes, they did. they did.
Yeah. So good stuff.
I'll definitely take credit for pushing them to stumble on themselves. Yeah. That's kind of how we set it up. So, but it was good.
Do you want to jump into a little premium and talk about some just in time training?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.